Good morning,
Dime.
counsel. This is the case of Swicord versus Police Standards Advisory Council, and we will begin with introductions from the court. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now by seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle, good morning.
I'm Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
I am Jeff Funk, good morning.
Jonathan Papik, good morning.
And John Friedenberg.
Justices, thank you. Mr. Delaney, are you on with us today?
I am.
Good morning to you. And Mr. Campbell, are you with us today?
I am, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
I do not have any questions.
I do not, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Then, Mr. Delaney, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Steve Delaney, and I represent the appellant to this matter, Blake Swicord. I would ask that the court allow me to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal in this case.
You may.
Thank you. First thing that needs to be said in this matter is an apology. An apology from myself for the inadvertent error in failing to file an assignments of error as part of our brief. This is something that I certainly regret, and I understand that failure to file the assignments of error relegates this court to a plain error review. With the exception, I believe that the meaning and interpretation of statutes, the court must still review independently of the district court in this matter. And we do have the interpretation and meaning of a statute, in this case, 29-3523. Plain error is plain error is plainly evident from the record and of such a nature that to leave it uncorrected would result in damage to the integrity, reputation, or fairness of the judicial process. The case before you today, Blake Swicord, deals with his application to become a law enforcement officer in the state of Nebraska. Blake Swicord was a law enforcement officer in the state of Georgia for approximately 25 years.
Mr. Delaney, perhaps I misunderstood, but I understood your argument to suggest with respect to the interplay of a failure to properly assign error and a question of statutory interpretation, that we would nonetheless reach a question of statutory interpretation without resorting to the plain error doctrine. Is that what you were arguing? And if so, do you have any authority for that proposition?
Your Honors, I looked at the under the Lingenfelter versus Lower Elkhorn Natural Resource District, 294 Nebraska 46, which is a 2016 case, I could not find an exception that stated that, and the quote is, whether a decision conforms to law and questions regarding the meaning and interpretation of statutes and regulations are questions of law which an appellate court independently reviews. I could not find any case law that says that that changes with a plain, I mean, I understand that plain error will apply to the other assignments that we would have applied, but I could not find any case law that said that it took away this court's obligation to make an independent review of that statutory interpretation.
I recall Lingenfelter, because I think I wrote it, and I don't recall any reference to plain error in the Lingenfelter opinion. Is there?
There is not. But I couldn't find any case law that said that plain error would then supplement this court's obligation to make an independent review.
So your argument in essence is that whenever someone argues a statutory interpretation, regardless of their complete failure to assign error with respect thereto, that we are obligated to reach the question of statutory interpretation as a matter of plain error?
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor.
Let's assume that that's not the rule in Nebraska. Where does that take us?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I still think we have the interpretation by the district court of that statute. I still believe it's plain error. I don't believe that it was interpreted properly, and we will go through that. So I think whether this court reviews it independently or reviews it under the plain error standard, I still think that the interpretation this court will find to be wrong, and that that interpretation previously given results to damage to the integrity, reputation, and fairness of the judicial process.
Thank you. That was a sufficient answer. Meg, go ahead.
Thank you.
I beg your pardon. To follow up on that interpretation, let me see if I can understand the breadth of that which you think is in front of us on plain error, that notwithstanding an absence of assignments of error, if interpretation of a statute is on deck, we would nevertheless have the full ability to interpret that statute. And is your argument that that is the breadth of what we can do on plain error, or perhaps as we did in Vann, we took the opportunity of plain error to review a line of cases which we thought were a little out of date?
Your Honor, I believe it's both. I think this court can review for plain error, but I also believe the court has that power to review independently. I don't know if that answers your question, Your Honor.
Thank you.
What I'd like to do, Your Honors, is kind of go through quickly the reciprocity process. Appellant Swicord had applied to the state through the reciprocity under Title 79. In that, there's an application process that you go through. And as this court knows from the record, there was a denial sent to my client on May 20th, 2019. My client then sent a response and refuted all of those things that had been alleged as the basis for denying his reciprocity. And he sent that on June 3rd of 2019. That's contained in the materials before you, T420 to 482. Shortly after that, there was a final letter saying that the director did not find any mitigating circumstances in the materials presented by Appellant Swicord, and therefore was going to deny him reciprocity.
I beg your pardon, and perhaps this is my mistake in not being well versed in the record. Is the Georgia arrest sealed?
My answer to that is yes, it would be sealed if the court. I think the answer to that question is on T329 and T330. And that is the fingerprint and the FBI and the NCIS or NCIC records that were received by Nebraska that show that there is no record of any arrest anywhere in the United States for the appellant in this matter. I think by deduction, you can deduce that the record is sealed because it doesn't appear anywhere. There was a release, and Appley makes note of the fact that he signed a release in this matter and gave the opportunity for the state to get those records. There is no record of that arrest, and therefore, I think it's safe to deduce that it has been sealed.
Do we know whether the state of Georgia has any procedure to seal arrest records? And if so, whether those procedures were followed in this case?
Your Honor, I believe I think the answer to that question is seen in the exhibits, which show that there is no arrest record. And so there has to be a procedure somewhere because it was not included with the information, so that when the director received that record, both from the FBI and from the State Patrol, there is no evidence of that arrest. And that's when the statute in this case comes into play. I understand, and I just have a quick question. On the timer says a minute 42. Does that mean I've got a minute 42 left before my time is up and I still retain 2 minutes?
No, that means you've got a minute and now 31 seconds till the end of the 10 minutes.
This has gone by so fast. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time. Justice Funk, did that answer your question?
It did. Thank you.
Thank you. I will then reserve the remainder of my time for a rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Campbell. Good morning to you again, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. James Campbell on behalf of the Appalachian State Agencies. The public must be able to rely on the truthfulness of police officers. Without that, our criminal justice system cannot function properly. For that reason, state law requires police applicants to demonstrate by clear and convincing evidence that they are honest, truthful, and trustworthy. The unanimous 7-member Police Standards Advisory Council and the District Court both concluded that Mr. Swicord failed to make this showing. This court should affirm because competent evidence supports that conclusion. Most notably, Mr. Swicord chose not to disclose his 2018 arrest for the battery of his girlfriend, despite a specific question asking if he had ever been arrested. Then, when Mr. Swicord tried to justify the omission, the concerns about his honesty only grew greater. At first, he apologized and said that he mistakenly thought the question asked only about convictions and not about arrests. But later, he testified that he had asked an out-of-state attorney whether he needed to disclose his arrest and was told that he didn't need to. Well, which is it? It can't be both a misunderstanding and a conscious choice based on outside input. Given these inconsistent excuses, the district court reasonably concluded that Mr. Swicord failed to demonstrate his honesty by clear and convincing evidence.
Counsel, the question that was propounded by the Nebraska entity, did it seek information within the scope of the applicant's knowledge, or did it seek reference to records that exist?
Your Honor, it sought information within his knowledge. It was a checkbox that said, have you ever been arrested, convicted, etc.? There were some other categories, and he checked the box, no. It didn't say, are there records publicly available regarding this? It said, have you ever been arrested? And he checked the box, no. And in doing so, and then compounding the problem by offering conflicting rationales for why he did that, he failed to show what he must, which is that he is honest, trustworthy, and truthful.
I'm sure you are aware that there are efforts legislatively all around the country, including in Nebraska, to allow people to get a fresh start. There are other terminologies that have been used, but essentially that seal records for the purpose of allowing people not to have to list them on employment applications, for example. In the interstate context, how should we interpret Nebraska's regime with respect to applications for law enforcement certification in the light of those legislative efforts in other states?
Well, I think the starting point is the Nebraska statute that deals with this issue, and that statute is 29-3523. And if the court starts there, it will find that there, first of all, I think the court should find, as the district court did, that that statute only applies to Nebraska arrest records. If the court disagrees with that, there's an exception in that statute when an individual, the arrestee, authorizes the release of the information, which is exactly what we have in this case. Mr. Swicord exercised a release and made it clear that the training center could acquire his arrest records. So that should be the end of it in this case. That would be our argument. Now, Mr. Swicord has not pointed to any state law in the state of Georgia or any other jurisdiction that would suggest his arrest record is a sealed document. It is not.
If the record was sealed in Georgia, would you agree that under 29-3523, he's legally entitled to answer as if that arrest did not happen.
Your Honor, I think that would probably be true. I think that would probably be true under the language of subsection 8 in that statute.
And could you respond? Could you respond to Mr. Swicord's argument that I understood opposing counsel to make that we know the records are sealed because they don't show up on whatever FBI report that was returned?
Well, our response to that is, first of all, there's nothing in the record on that. As Mr. Swicord's counsel made clear this morning, he's just making a deduction based on what he's reading in the record. We actually do have a copy of the arrest report, the incident report, in the record. It was provided to the Police Advisory Council by the corresponding Georgia agency. And so the document was disclosed. It was disclosed pursuant to the request that our agency sent over to Georgia. And so for that reason, it is proper for it to be considered in this record. And it was something that Mr. Schweikert should have disclosed in the context of his application. One of the other questions that came up at the beginning of the argument involved the question of plain error. Opposing counsel talked about the Lingenfelter case and said that was the relevant authority. We would encourage the court instead to look to the Samantha L. and the Estate of Shuntz case. Those cases actually do deal with the plain error standard, and they don't make any exception for the question of law being outside of plain error review.
Mr. Campbell, I have a question about your argument that we're limited to plain error and that plain error doesn't impact the interpretation of statute. But we also, you filed a petition to bypass in this case, and you argued that there were issues of first impression that needed to be decided. So in light of that argument and your petition to bypass, how much are you arguing that we should say in this case to address the statutory issues or any others?
So the statutory issues we think are pretty straightforward. Certainly they're novel questions, but they're straightforward. What Mr. Schweikert is attempting to do, at least in part, is to read the statute as if it applies to Georgia records. We think the court should make it clear that the statute doesn't apply to Georgia records, that on its face, it only applies to Nebraska arrest records. So that's something that the court can do. The court can do whether it applies plain error review or whether the court applies a sort of de novo review as it looks at a question of law. And then if the court wants to go further in interpreting the statute, which I think it should under these circumstances, it can also recognize that when an arrestee executes a release, as Mr. Swicord did in this case, that this all falls outside of that statute as well. And so we would encourage the court to do that because we think that would provide guidance for cases going forward in the future.
So aren't you asking us to do the very thing that Mr. Delaney asked us to do? And that's notwithstanding lack of an assignment of errors section and the fact that we would normally be reviewing under plain error, to independently interpret the statutes that are at issue.
I don't think we're asking you to independently do it. We're asking you to do it within the confines of plain error review. But certainly if the court thinks that there is an exception for plain error review for statutory interpretation, then we think that the question would fall squarely in support of the state and that the attempt to construe the statute as Mr. Swicord is doing should ultimately fail.
Is there any particular language in the statute that will advance your argument that it applies to Nebraska arrests but not other states?
Yes, we cite a provision. I'm scanning through our brief here really fast. We cite a statute. It is Nebraska Revised Statute 29-3502. That's one of the statutes that deals with the purpose of the section of the entire section where the relevant provision is found. And it specifically says that the purpose is to, quote, control and coordinate criminal offender record keeping within this state. And so we would argue to the court that that language makes clear that the relevant statute, which is 29-3523, applies only to Nebraska arrest records.
Doesn't the statute also give significant directions to public record keeping organizations?
Your Honor, I think it's primarily the direction of the statute is primarily directed at criminal justice agencies, I think is the.
That's what I was trying to get to. And the Nebraska legislature has no authority to tell the Georgia criminal justice agencies how to run their business, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that is one of the points that we made in our brief is that the state of Nebraska doesn't even have jurisdiction to tell Georgia what to do with its records. I see that I'm out of time unless there are any further questions. I thank the court for its time and attention this morning.
Thank you very much. Madam Bailiff, do we have any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 1 minute and 13 seconds.
1 minute and 13 seconds, Mr. Delaney.
You're on mute, Delaney.
I apologize. The appellee in this matter indicates that they want this court to hold Mr. Swicord to subsection 3 of 29-3523, but not to subsection 8 of that statute. They say by signing the release, he then waives his right to be able to say that he has no arrest pursuant to section 8 of that statute. And there is nothing in that statute that says that is true. Now,
I understood the argument to be that subsection 8 applies only if the record is sealed. And he argued that we have the arrest record in our record and there's no evidence that it was sealed. How would you respond to that?
My response is that's inaccurate. The police report he's referencing was not offered by PSAC in their case originally and is not included with the State Patrol or the FBI search. It is a record that someone in the Georgia State Patrol said, hey, by the way, I've got this record here that I can go ahead and send to you. But what is not, it was not received pursuant to the subsection 3 as part of a criminal history report that was run by the State Patrol or the FBI in this matter. It is an entirely separate document. It has nothing to do with the criminal history check that was done in this case, which showed that the record had been sealed because it doesn't exist there. And I see that I'm out of time already. I thank you very much for your time and thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. That concludes arguments in Swicord versus Police Standards Advisory Council, so you are excused, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Everett versus Serb.